Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Prepping for Everything podcast, where we discuss all things preparedness, homesteading, self-sufficiency, animals, food preservation, and so much more. My name is Emily, and today I want to really strip things back to the basics and start at the beginning of this whole prepping topic with you. Because I know how overwhelming it can be to feel like you need to learn and do and buy everything all at once, and I'm here to tell you that it doesn't need to be like that. There's no point in running before we can walk, and I want you to go forward knowing what you're doing rather than frantically scrambling and then making mistakes. I think a lot of the internal pressure around this comes from feeling fear-driven, which I guess is why a lot of people stumble upon this whole concept in the first place, right? Whether it's because you saw the empty supermarket shelves, no toilet roll in 2020, and the government overreach that accompanied it, the news headlines of war causing you fear, or you could have lived through a natural disaster and that's what's brought you here. Whatever it is, I want to try and encourage you to take a deep breath and come into this as rationally as possible. Fear-driven decisions and purchases are almost always not worth it. You're going to end up spending time and money on something that you don't need. For example, if you don't like, eat, or know any recipes that use dried beans, then don't bulk buy them just because you saw someone on YouTube recommend them for the long shelf life. I'm here to tell you to make decisions based on your own family's wants and needs. I mean, I know that that's easier said than done, and I'm speaking on personal experience when it comes to this because I made a lot of fearful, rash, and inexperienced mistakes at first, and it genuinely did cost me in time, money, and resources. Like, I thought I was doing great by storing a lot of food in an outdoor shed. It got it out of our home and it had its own designated organized space, which is great, right? Wrong. Little did I know that fluctuating temperatures and condensation from an inadequately insulated shed was a surefire way to completely ruin half of it. That was probably one of my first biggest mistakes, and it made me take a step back and go, maybe there is more to this than I initially thought. Again, this was years ago, and thankfully I've learned a lot about food preservation in particular since then, but whenever I receive frantic messages on social media from folk, I completely resonate because I know how you feel and I know that you're stalled with starting because it's so overwhelming. I get messages saying that you can't see yourself being where we are now. And I just always want to say to never compare your journey to someone else's that you see on Instagram because social media is a highlight reel. It doesn't show you behind the scenes, the hard lessons that have been learned and the amount of time that went into it. And not to mention the fact that preparedness is so individual and is genuinely going to look different for everyone. My journey isn't the same as yours. A family that lives in the countryside and has a farm and 13 kids, prepping is going to look different for them compared to somebody who lives in an apartment in the middle of a city. But that doesn't mean that the person in the apartment can't still prepare. I get messages all the time saying, I don't have land, I don't have space, I live in the city, what am I meant to do? And let me tell you, you don't need to live on a homestead to live like this, to become more prepared, to have a food storage, whatever you're telling yourself you can't do here, you can. And it might look different to all these homestead accounts that you follow on Instagram, but again, that's social media and that's someone else's life. We've got to look at ourselves, assess our own needs and how we're going to move forward. So let's talk about what prepping actually is, because I don't want to jump over this. To me, at its core, it's simply being a responsible human being and looking after my family in the best way that I can. Now, how that looks, like I mentioned, is different for everyone. I think prepping was hijacked by the extremist viewpoints years ago, which could be from the dramatized TV shows only showing the doomsday points of view. And the negative connotations surrounding this whole topic are really hard to shift now. People who don't understand you will view you as delusional, selfish, a tinfoil hat wearer who fearfully sits in an underground bunker surrounded by enough food to last 30 years. And while there are people like that, and keep in mind, I'm not bashing anyone for their viewpoints, I'd actually love to see a hardcore prepper set up, but it's typically not the majority. Practical preparedness is something that many of us partake in without even realizing. Do you have some snacks, water, and a jacket in your car? You're prepared. You don't spend time in a crowded place staring at your phone, and instead you are situationally aware of your surroundings. You're prepared. Do you have a family home fire drill plan, how to get out the house in an emergency? You're prepared. So For me, prepping is nothing more than assessing your family's needs, seeing what could go wrong, and acting accordingly. Whether that's creating plans, gathering resources, and developing skills to overcome emergencies and disasters, or everyday situations, I really want to destigmatize and normalize what it truly is and what is happening here, because I know the peace of mind it can bring, and I know as a nation or worldwide the difference it could make if people took control in a calm and proactive way, rather than a reactive way if something bad did happen. And I wonder if that's why every government, military, church, community centre, the list goes on, promotes the idea that individuals and their citizens should be prepared and often even have resources to help with this. In fact, I recently saw in the UK government's Resilient Framework's new guidance, it encourages everyone to be prepared and urges households to stockpile items such as radios, candles, and have ample food in case disaster strikes. So it's okay for the government to say that, but when the average Joe does it, you're seen as a crazy person. What I found really cool on their website as well, that they even touch on having a grab bag, which is often referred to as like a bug out bag or a go bag in the preparedness world. And what this is essentially is a bag that's packed and ready to go with items that you'd need in the event of emergency. So if you had to leave your house immediately, then you aren't wasting time in a life-threatening situation scrambling, trying to get this all together. I'll touch more on the specifics of bug out bags in a future episode, but what I'm trying to reiterate here is that this isn't something that's a far out concept. And why people prep, again, is completely individual. The scope and reasonings of preparedness are large, and they range from in case of job loss and medical emergencies to war or food shortages or a whole system collapse as we know it. For us, in the Highlands of Scotland, we thankfully don't have the likes of hurricanes or tsunamis here. But we do have harsh weather in winter, and we've been snowed in for days on end sometimes. We get power outages, we live in a rural location, and we're actually in the process of moving to somewhere even more rural, so it's not easy to just nip to the shop for some food if you run out of something in the middle of dinner. And not to mention the fact that our hospital is also hours away now. Another reason why we prep is because Will, my husband, is the biggest earner in our family, and his work is kind of unstable sometimes. He works away, he's on rotations, it's not always a steady job. So if he's out of work, or if he is injured or ill, it means that we don't have any money coming in. We need to have reserves, we need to have finances as a backup and savings and a food storage for tighter times of life. And then you have the likes of prepping to help curb inflation, like the rice that I bought in bulk 2 years ago has quadrupled in price now, and I can guarantee you that wages have not gone up in line with that. There's so many reasons. I don't like going too conspiracy through these platforms because I do like to still make it accessible for everyone. And I think when you go down the rabbit hole with people who aren't ready to go down the rabbit hole, it can push them further away. But I'm also a firm believer that it's silly to be totally dependent on the grocery stores to feed us when all it takes is some disruption and we would all starve because we're so disconnected from our food source nowadays. Like, have you all seen that viral TikTok video of a girl who's standing in her kitchen and she's going on about the fact that she didn't know that she could just pick fruit off her tree to eat? She had a lemon tree in her front garden and she was constantly buying lemons from the grocery store, and her friend came over one day and her friend was like, "Why do you not just use the ones in her garden?" And she genuinely didn't know that you could do that. And I'm not shaming this girl. I think it's a great opportunity for a lesson here. And hopefully she now picks the lemons off her tree in the garden. But it just shows how disconnected from our food we are. Maybe that's by design. Maybe it's to keep us reliant and dependent on the system. Maybe it's so that we aren't self-sufficient and we're constantly buying things and consuming and consuming and consuming. But the thought of this freaks me out. I read a statistic recently that said if there was a supply chain disruption, all it would take is 72 hours for grocery stores to be completely empty. I just think back to a few years ago and I question if people fought over toilet roll, what on earth would they do if food was scarce? It doesn't bear thinking about. And I don't say this to scare you, and I completely believe that we can slowly and steadily build up our skills, pantries, and peace of mind. I don't want you to listen to this podcast and be fearful or overwhelmed or act like you need to go and do it all at once, remember. I just want to say that taking the first step, any step, is better than standing still forever and praying that someone else will save us if something bad happens. So, How do you get started? Because if you've clicked on this podcast, I'm assuming that's why you're here. I'm going to go through the absolute basics within this, and we can build upon it in future episodes because there is too much to cram into one episode, and I want to help you as best I can. As we discussed, preparedness is personal, so I want to ask you to take a minute to think about your own needs. If you want to get a pen and notebook, this might be helpful to get really clear on your own situation and goals. You might want to pause this podcast, you might want to come back to it after listening to the whole thing, but I think it's really worth doing this exercise just so it helps you get really clear in your own head. Let's first figure out who you are preparing for. How many people does it include? Is it immediate family, or are you thinking about your extended family too? I know that this is a controversial topic in the preparedness world, but maybe you're in a position financially or otherwise where you can prepare for your neighbours or church as well. I say it's controversial because there's this narrative that runs amongst a lot of preppers that can be kind of selfish sometimes. If something went wrong, it's very much, well, you didn't prepare, so why should I use every bit of my preparations to help you? And I do see it. And it does get funny and frustrating if anyone finds out that you're doing something like this. The first thing that they say is, well, I know where I'm going, or I'm coming to your house if things go south. And it's like, yeah, it's all fine and well, but if things go south, people don't have enough resources to feed and look after everyone else who didn't prepare when they had the opportunity to do so. It's a touchy subject, and I think it's one that we don't really know how we would respond until we're in the situation, because at the end of the day, like, you don't want to see people suffering, or at least I don't want to see people suffering, and I would never be turning away my friends and family if they came to me in a situation where they needed help. Back to what I was saying. Figure out who you're preparing for. And whoever it is, think about the individual needs of that person. Their age, any medications that they're on, allergies and dietary requirements, health issues. The list could go on and on. Of course, prepping for a baby, for example, is going to be really different to that of an old person. If you're prepping for a baby, you could be keeping extra formula and storing that correctly, extra nappies of all sizes and reusable ones, and a few sizes of bigger outfits for them to be continually growing into. The next thing we want to do is get really clear on what we are prepping for. So we need to try and prioritize our risks by listing what is most likely to least likely to happen and how you think it would be best to prepare for it. Do you live in an area that's prone to burglaries? Why am I struggling so much with that? Is that the Scottish accent? Burglaries. Natural disasters. Do you live near a nuclear plant? Or maybe you want to be ready for power outages. Would you be fine if you didn't have power for a week? Try and define your ultimate goal to help you focused and stay on track. And again, I know that's harder said than done sometimes because a lot of this is fear fueled. You've seen a headline that's really made you like, oh my gosh, we're not going to have rice next week. You know, I've seen a lot of these things recently where it's going on about food shortages, where it's going on about war. I mean, just recently, Sweden told its citizens to prepare for war. And I think they were doing that to try and build a prepared nation, but I know that that could be really fear-mongering and scary for a lot of people, which could induce panic buying. It could induce this whole unsettled feeling. And this is what we want to avoid. And lastly, how do we prepare for the situations that we are concerned about? Well, usually the basics of preparedness covers food, water, shelter and warmth, hygiene and sanitation, and the likes of security and self-defense. How are you going to protect yourself and everything if things did go south? Of course, we have so many subcategories too, which go into evacuation and bugging out, personal health and fitness, financial preparedness, skills and knowledge, forming a resilient community. I could keep going on, but I think it's important to just form achievable goals. So I personally started with 2 weeks worth of essentials. That didn't seem too overwhelming, and it gave me an end goal to reach rather than just feeling like I never had enough and spiraling from there. So 2 weeks worth of usual breakfasts, lunches, dinners, water. You typically need way more water than you first realize, but the good thing about water is it doesn't need to be equal. What I mean by that is drinking water and water for flushing the toilet are two very different things entirely, but we will go into this in future episodes. Try also having some extra sanitary items such as wet wipes, soap, feminine hygiene products. Don't forget about extra prescription medications, and having some reserves of painkillers is also a good idea. Just don't overcomplicate it and don't feel like you need to rush out and buy the most expensive equipment if you don't even have the basics like this nailed first. A lot of what we touched on today, I do plan on going into more in depth in further episodes. There's obviously just a broad spectrum of components to cover when it comes to preparedness, and I want to keep today really basic and not too much of an information overload. But I did ask you all on Instagram to leave some questions with what you needed help with, and that's what we're going to get into next. Elizabeth asks, why did we start prepping? I did touch on this earlier in the episode, but I think it was just a lot of different things that were adding up. It wasn't like one big event happened that really was life-changing and earth-shattering and made me turn into this really hardcore prepper. It was more just like I was slowly starting to have this realization just how dependent on the systems around us we were. It was like a slap in the face. Even now, we are still dependent on a lot, although we are doing our damnedest to reduce that. I think a lot of people on Instagram specifically think that we're off grid, and we certainly aren't. But I'd love to get to a point that if anything were to happen externally, that we could go on living and not be so massively affected. I don't want to sound naive when I say that, and I don't want to downplay the severity of what could happen, because I think life would change forever for a lot of people if it was extreme. Honestly, I don't want to go off grid, but I'd love to have the option. Does that make sense? Like, I love my electric blanket on my bed in winter, but we also have a wood stove to heat the house and a kettle that sits on top of the wood stove and hot water bottles as a backup. Like, I enjoy all these little luxuries, and I genuinely do appreciate a lot of what modern living has brought us. I don't want to romanticize how hard off-grid living can be, because it's tough and there's a lot of hard work involved. And yeah, I think I would just like the best of both worlds if that is possible. Helen asks, hi Helen, I love you Helen. How to find other preppers locally so you can prep and share knowledge together. Now, this one's difficult, as most preppers don't want you to know that they prep. Rule one of Fight Club, you don't talk about Fight Club. I've joined so many Facebook survival and prepping groups, and it's quite good for information, but people are so guarded and have their backs up. I mean, I can see why, because you don't want people to be flocking to you in a bad situation. You don't want to put a target on your back. You don't want to be that house that people say, well, I know that they've got a lot of food if everybody else can't eat food, because yeah, you're going to get targeted. I found the way around this is to find others who are interested in a lot of what prepping encompasses, right? So such as hunting or self-defense, self-sufficiency, or even herbalism and canning. Like, you'll find others who resonate with your viewpoints, and from there you can sort of start testing the waters and dropping parts into your conversation, you know? I'm sure Helen, who asked this question, and I share a lot of similar beliefs, and we would get on really well in real life, and I gauged that really through her social media, which is an amazing follow, by the way. It's A Wild Helen, all one word, and I learned so much from her about van life, plant remedies, and the uses from her, which is so important, and it's a big part of preparedness, right? If anything were to ever happen where we don't have modern medicine or the typical standard setups that we have around us, we need to know how to use this and get back to our roots, just like all of our ancestors were doing. Of Emily and Tobias, and they ask, do you need a bug out bag per person? I was thinking hubby and I could share ours with the littlest. I do recommend having a bug out bag per person. I know in an ideal world, if anything were to ever go wrong, we would be with our husbands, with our wives, with our families, right? But that's not always going to be the case. And even if we were together, if something bad happened, we could get separated somewhere along the line. So in my head, it makes more sense to make sure that you have the essentials that you need to get by without one another, just in case that happened, just in case a situation unfolded. Also, for a family, if you're talking about even more than two of you, one bag is unlikely to carry everything that you're all going to need. We've got to think about shelter. We've got to think about sleeping bags and keeping warm and having enough food that can get us through a few days. And I just think if you're dividing this between more of you, then you've got a better chance of things going in your favor. Now, I'd also like to say while we're on this topic that it might be worth adding a small photo of your family or your kids to your bags just in case you do get separated, so that when you're asking people, you've got a physical photo that you can show. Because again, depending on the severity of any situation, you might not have access to your phone, you might not have access to power, and having something physical to be able to locate your family members would be massive. Patricia asks, where do we see your info other than Instagram? Good question, Patricia. Instagram is definitely the main place that I'm active on, especially in stories. I think that's where we get a lot of behind the scenes. Obviously through this podcast every week, I don't need to tell you that if you're listening just now. On my website, I do have a blog section which goes into more depth on certain topics, but I'm not as active on there as I'd like to be. I really need to get on top of that. I also have a newsletter that you can subscribe to. I try and get a newsletter out every sort of month or so, or every 2 months at a push. And I just feel like we can sort of get a little bit more personal on there. You're not dealing with any shadow bans on social media. And yeah, I can just speak freely, I think we can probably say. And I will leave that in the show notes below. So if you want to sign up, just click the link and it will take you to the sign up page. I've also been saying to myself for a long time that I'd love to get on YouTube, but we're not yet there yet. So maybe in the future when I have more time. What is time when you have a newborn? Rebecca and India are both asking about how to start with a limited budget. Prepping on a very low budget. You can buy weekly food shops, but you don't have extra cash. Okay, I totally understand this. And really, I think this is where prepping has been really commercialized and just unnecessary in a lot of cases, because you don't need to spend a lot of money for preparedness. I mean, often when we think of prepping, we think of people stockpiling or building up their food storage, which can still be done on a small budget. There's so many apps. For example, in the UK, we have Olio and Too Good To Go, and they're apps where you can get food that's about to go out of date, either for free or for a very small price. And you can then preserve that. You can freeze that. You can use that. There's ways of doing it that you don't need to go in and spend loads of money. Every time that you're going to the shop, if there's something that you regularly use, like beans or chopped tomatoes, you can get these for really cheap. Well, you can in the UK anyway. I think a can of beans for supermarket own brand is like 27 pence. And I totally appreciate that a lot of people don't have that extra cash to spend. But if you're just buying one extra tin or can per shop, that can add up. That also adds to your food storage. If we're shopping smart and shopping with coupons, if we're looking at, you know, sales, if something that you regularly use is on sale, buy two of them. Buy one for now and one for later. Put some away. If you can try and save up your money to bulk buy, say that you eat rice several times a week. Instead of buying small packets of rice, if you can bulk buy rice to keep the price down, then you can do that as well. There's a lot of ways around it. But that's just talking about building up your food storage, right? There are so many things within preparedness that is totally free, and mainly skills. Again, practicing situational awareness, increasing your physical fitness and health, going for a run. Going for a run is free. There are so many things that we can be doing, but I always encourage people to use the internet. I sound like a broken record when I'm going on about this, but there is so much free information on the likes of YouTube or social media pages that you follow. I hope that my Instagram page provides you with free, decent content some of the time anyway. And you can learn from there. You know, can you imagine 100 years ago, we were telling people that they can learn so much from the internet? People's minds would be blown. And I think we almost have that much information that it can be overwhelming and really hard to streamline and learn something. Think about knot tying. Think about learning how to butcher an animal. Think about saving seeds, how to grow certain things in your windowsill. There's just such an array of information that you can type into Google or type into YouTube right now and learn so much about. And that is still prepping. That is preparedness. Knowing how to crochet, knowing how to knit your own socks is preparedness. I know a lot of the time we don't think that because we're really seeing a lot of extremist views, typically It can be a lot of the time pushed by men who are ex-military and really hard to relate to for a woman, for a mother, for somebody who isn't in that line of work, that crocheting to us doesn't feel like we're doing anything. But that is a valuable skill. If you can knit and mend clothing, that is a valuable skill. If you're a nurse and you have some first aid, or even if you're not a nurse, if you've got first aid knowledge, that is a valuable skill. And this all comes under the preparedness umbrella. It's not just about stockpiling goods. And I'll go as far as saying that if you have more skills and if you have the right mindset, you're going to go a lot further in any form of serious survival situation than someone who's just hoarded all the goods but not done any of the work, not done the physical exercise, not worked on their mindset and not built their skills. Sondra asks, what are the basic supplies for long-term food storage? Well, food to start with. Typically for long-term, you're going to want dry goods, which are low fat and low oil content, because they are typically going to store the best. Food storage in particular is something that I could talk about forever, and it's actually what my e-course is based on. My e-course, Preparing Your Pantry, I'll link it in the show notes below. Shameless plug, I know, but that's where I can really dive deep and I give video tutorials and everything else. But your supplies, really, you're wanting to find a cool, dry, dark place. You're wanting to keep your food away from oxygen, away from moisture. And that can be done through the use of Mylar bags or food grade buckets. And some people love canning, some people love dehydrating, some people love freeze drying. All of this equipment can help you build your long-term food storage as well, but it doesn't need to be overcomplicated. Like I keep saying, you can start by just getting a bag of rice, which can last 20 years when it's stored correctly. C. Barlow asks, how much water do I need for my family? So the standard recommendation for this is 1 gallon, which is about 4 liters for my UK listeners, per person per day. I would really encourage you to go higher than that if you could. Usually I recommend about 2 gallons per person per day, as a lot of us are not used to conserving water in an emergency situation, right? We are so used to turning our taps on and having water flow out of them that we are almost spoiled in that sense, and we've never really had to think about it. So having a little bit more water would be a good thing if for some reason you didn't have it. Now, again, this isn't a far away, some sort of apocalyptic event that's happening here. We had a mains line burst, I think that was a good few months ago now. And I can remember in the morning, I went to fill up the dog water bowl and turn the taps on and nothing came out. And I was like, oh, well, here we go. The end of the world is near. No, I'm only joking. Kind of. But just having some water as a backup is a really great thing, because we need water for so much more than just drinking. We shower with it. We obviously, our pets drink it as well. We use it for cleaning our dishes and washing our clothes and cleaning our house and watering our plants and keeping our livestock alive and everything else. It's a really, really big one. Okay, the last set of questions I'm going to touch on here, because I got so many different variations of this question. People who live in apartments, in flats, people who don't have farm or land available, people who are normal families and don't have space. All of these questions to do with, there's another one. Could you give advice on getting started in a small home with minimal space and a small yard? I think this was definitely my most asked about question. And let me tell you, it is possible to prepare no matter where you are. You don't need land to prepare. You don't need to go full blown, full steam ahead, buy land, grow all the food, go completely self-sufficient, off-grid, and never get an Amazon delivery again. That's not the way it needs to be. You can prepare in an apartment. And the first step that I would say, if you are living in a small place, is simply declutter. I know that's probably not what you wanted to hear, but clearing out all of your space, and I learned this the hard way. We have just started clearing out our home to move house, and oh my goodness, you don't realize how much rubbish you accumulate, how much things that you are never going to use. And it's hard. As someone who sees value in pretty much everything, I know it's difficult to let go of things. But that would be my first step. That would be my first recommendation. Clear out anything you're not using. Go into your cupboards and really meticulously go through it. It's going to take a day or two or three, but it's the best way to find extra space when you are struggling for it. Will and I used to live in a small tin bothy, and if we could prepare in there, I'm not kidding you, I don't know how to describe how small this place was, but if we could keep extra supplies in there, I know that you can do it where you are. So clear out, declutter, reorganize, put everything back in, and it almost gives you this nice fresh slate for starting, and then take it from there. You don't need to dive straight into growing food and keeping animals. Like, just build up a little bit of food reserves. Like I said, maybe 1 or 2 weeks, then focus on water. If you can have, like, go to the store, buy a case of water. You don't even need to have a rain barrel catchment system, which I've seen done in apartments, by the way. If you just search for that in Google, like rain water collection system in a balcony, people are so smart in the way that they have their setups to suit what they're doing. Just because you live in an apartment or a flat doesn't mean that this isn't accessible to you, because it is. And I can guarantee you, for the likes of building a bug out bag, if you go around your home and just take what you've already got there just now, you would be able to pretty much build a bag. Have a look around. If there's clothes that you hardly ever use, and you were thinking about maybe donating them to a charity shop, you know, try and find a pair of trainers, try and find a t-shirt, a cozy top, and a pair of trousers that you hardly ever use, and put them directly into your bug out bag so that you now have a change of clothes if you needed to leave in an emergency. And I've heard of people using these bags for so much more. For example, someone who goes into labor at home and they haven't packed a hospital bag, they grab their bug out bag instead. These are great things to have. As you can tell, I'm encouraging you throughout this episode to start with food, water, as they're the most important things, right? They're what keep us alive day to day. And from there, we touch on sanitary and hygiene items and medications. If you have all of this nailed, you've got a really, really good starting point. You're not behind just because you live in a city, just because you live elsewhere. You can take responsibility. You can move forward from here. You've got this. You're listening to this podcast. You're being proactive. You're making steps towards where you want to be. So well done. This is how I'm going to end. I want to tell you that you're doing it. You've got this. You're going to look back in a year and think, why was I so worried when all I needed was just a good mindset and some extra resources and some extra knowledge? Keep researching, keep building up slowly and little by little, and you will get to where you want to be. Thank you again for tuning in. I hope you found some value in this episode, and please remember, if you did, to leave a review, as that helps me so much and it's going to help other people find this episode. I really appreciate you, and I hope that we can talk again next week.